is Eat Out In.
I've got this wonderful story about a new social enterprise. And, you know, it's the simple things in life that are often the best, aren't they? A slice of warm, crusty bread straight out of the oven, slathered with tangy butter with a lovely cup of tea. And everyone has a bread and butter staple, whatever their culture is. Have you ever thought about that? You know, everyone has their own version, whether it's pita bread with a brush of olive oil or naan bread or croissants. Everyone has their own bread and butter. So it was a very clever idea to use bread and butter as the foundation for one of Australia's most successful social enterprises. It's called the Bread and Butter Project, and it trains refugees and asylum seekers to become bakers. Graduates hail from as far afield as Sierra Leone, Mongolia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Syria, Iran, Iraq. And one of the blokes behind the Bread and Butter Project joins me now from New York. Paul Allam, welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Now, Paul, you and your business partner, David McGinnis, started the Bread and Butter Project, I understand, way back in 2010. How did you get the idea?
Well, I was invited to go over to Maysalt, which is on the Thai-Burma border, and the nuns there in the orphanage, they had an oven, and they had this idea that they were going to train the local women from the refugee camp to learn how to bake and then sell that product into a local town. And I had a friend there and a connection, and they asked if I'd come over and teach the women, and I did. And it was a pretty transformative experience, and it was amazing, and I really was thinking quite deeply about what the nuns were doing, and basically what they were doing, which I didn't know then, was social enterprise. And social enterprise is a business whose profits are reinvested back into the mission. So I came back, and as the founder of Girl Street Bakery, we had a business already, and then we had the wholesale arm, which we never used. So we decided to basically steal the nun's idea and set it up in Sydney.
Yeah. And the focus of this is helping asylum seekers and refugees in Australia. Why did you see a need in this particular community, Paul?
Well, in the beginning, when I wrote the first plan, I had sort of a lot of different groups in there. I had people with disability and long-term unemployed. But as we started to go around and ask the different groups of their needs, it was pretty clear at that time that the refugee and asylum seeker community really needed this sort of ability to place people into employment, and they were underserved to a degree. My father is not a refugee, but he did come here on a boat, so technically. But I was really, my wife's grandparents were refugees, so it was a personal connection there too. But in the end, it was more that we really saw the need to help.
Yeah. And what about your trainees? Can you tell me a little bit about where they come from?
Sure. I mean, over sort of been going nearly 10 years now. They've come from Iraq or Syria, Pakistan, Somalia, Sierra Leone. I mean, it's all the hotspots, really. But as of different issues have come up around the world, we've found that there's an influx from those areas. We do offer them a 6 to 8 month paid training program, which is pretty intensive. And then they go into, they achieve TAFE accreditation, which is really important. They really value that ability to learn as well as learn on the job. And then we place them into work placement. So we'll pay them to go off into a different business and to learn in a different environment, a different workspace. And it's half the challenge of going into a workplace. I mean, if normal people go into a different job and they feel a little bit out of sorts, so it's important that we show them a different workspace as well. We also provide them with ESL tutoring, so a tutor will come on site and go through different English language issues around, specifically around baking or sometimes just around their life.
Paul, it must be so difficult for these people because many of them would have come from very traumatic conflict zones. What sort of things do they tell you that they've experienced, that they've seen before they've arrived at your facility?
Well, I mean, we have a social worker on staff, someone who helps with that. So we don't really, I mean, in the beginning of the vetting of the stage, we were interested in, as any employee would be, if they can come to the job and if they can do the job and if they're happy to do the job.
Mm.
We don't delve too much into their past history unless they offer that. So we've found that if they come forward with those stories, then we will listen and listen and listen. And there's someone on staff to do that. We don't tend to cry.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a social worker there that can support them. And in terms of, you know, what sort of backgrounds have they come from? What work had they been doing before they come to you? I mean, have any of them been working with food or hospitality?
It's fairly rare. There was a baker a couple of years ago, and that was amazing.
Oh, okay.
But it's really a large spread. So some are engineers, some people have worked within government. There was teachers. It's just really anybody. When people come to a country the first time, it's very difficult to navigate the easiest and simplest things, the buses, public transport, where to do your shopping or anything like that. So it's a very holistic approach. We try and help them with not just only the job, but in any kind of service in their life.
I'm chatting to Paul.
In terms of their professional life before,
yeah.
We don't really mind too much.
I'm chatting to Paul Allam, who started up the Bread and Butter Project with his partner. He runs the Bourke Street Bakery, a chain of bakeries around Australia. And I'm speaking to him from New York, where they've opened up an outlet. The Bread and Butter Project focuses on supporting asylum seekers and refugees. So your trainees, what sorts of things do they learn to bake, to cook, Paul?
So it's staged development through the program. So ours is a wholesale bakery, so it's quite intensive in what they start to learn. So they'll learn to shape and to handle dough, to understand what a good dough should feel like, and then how to shape a loaf, and then how to eventually bake that loaf. So it generally goes into three stages. They start to shape, then they start to mix the dough, and then they start to bake the dough. There's also a little side where we do pastry, so they can delve into that area. They can understand how to laminate croissants, how they can do cinnamon buns. So that's something we developed a few years ago in response to our customers, and also be able to teach the trainees a different side of what is out there.
Yum, it sounds delicious.
Yeah, it is. It's great bread and great pastry.
Yeah. And where are these breads sold, Paul?
Well, at the moment, it's difficult within COVID, but at the moment we've got some outlets in Metro, Lewis and Harris Farm. There are a number of them in Metro at the moment, which has been terrific, as well as Harris Farm. They've been great partners. I'm not too sure about the other sort of wholesale links because I'm out of that operational side and have been for a little bit. But I know that Woolworths and Harris Farm shops are doing quite well.
Yeah, that's terrific that you've got those outlets. And how many graduates, Paul, have gone through your program to date, roughly?
I think it's nearly on 60.
Brilliant.
So we've got capacity for about 30 a year now, which is it's a great step up.
And do some of them stay on with you and then some of them move to other businesses?
Yes. Yes, so actually the first graduate is still with us.
Oh, really?
That's been every time I see her, I nearly cry. Ma was our first graduate and she's still with us doing pastry. So that's been amazing. So it was the instance in the beginning was we felt we should hire a few back so that we can they can train and teach the other graduates, the trainees, how things are done, and can push them through the program with ease. And then we couldn't employ everyone back, obviously, so then we started to open up to different businesses. It's not just baking businesses we're looking at. We're looking at any hospitality business. So if someone's interested in going into cooking and understanding the chef side, then we'll place them within a restaurant or a bakery that has a little bit more cooking so they can understand that and they can do that trial there for a few weeks. And then ultimately we'll place them hopefully in that job. Some people go into more manufacturing plants. Mm. So it really depends on the person and what they feel they want to commit to and if this is a career going forward.
Yeah. And tell me, how do you select your applicants for the program?
So we do an English language test, which is very important because you need people to understand the recipes and also understand the workplace issues. So once they pass that, we look at how long they've been in Australia and their attitude, and we give them a couple of trial shifts, and then basically we employ them. So it's basically the same sort of staged employment as a normal business with a few little issues on around English.
Yeah. And how long is the training program and what qualification do they leave with?
6 to 8 months, basically, but we'll keep people on, or if they get a great offer beforehand, within, you know, on the six-month mark, we'll definitely place them in. They receive a TAFE qualification. I think it's an ESL Cert 5 at the moment. TAFE's been also a great partner. So that's an important part of what our program has become, just to have someone to have that theoretical knowledge around cooking or baking is very important to take on to the next employer.
Mm.
And the ESL tutoring is more of a volunteer-based, with different people coming on site and just going through English language issues around the bakery.
And are you finding, obviously we've been watching with great concern the unfolding events in Afghanistan, there's, you know, a lot of refugee issues there. Are you finding you're getting applicants coming from certain parts of the world at the moment because of where the conflicts are centred?
That has definitely been the case in the past. Around Sri Lanka a couple of years ago, that was definitely what was happening. I expect that would be happening very soon for us. I'm not sure around what's happening with the government and how many people are coming out from Afghanistan, so I can't really answer that one, but I expect it would be more Afghanis coming to Australia soon, and that's been a trend. It's what's happened in the past.
Mm. This is ABC Radio Nightlife with Indira Naidoo, and I'm speaking to Paul Allam, who started the Bread and Butter Project through his work initially with the Bourke Street Bakery chain, and he's in New York where he set up a outlet for that business. COVID, Paul, must have knocked your training program for Bread and Butter quite a bit. What effect has it had on the program?
Yeah, it's been devastating. Like many businesses, we've struggled. The JobKeeper of last year was instrumental in keeping us alive, as has been many corporates and philanthropic donations. So we were about 30-40% down at some points, and that hasn't really abated yet. So hopefully, as I can watch from the other side of the world, vaccination rates are going up and Australia is definitely heading in the right direction, which is terrific to see. But in the last year, it's certainly been very difficult for the Bread and Butter Project. And I think without sort of great friends and partners, we would have struggled immensely.
Mm. How is the Bread and Butter Project funded?
So it's about 90% sustainable. I mean, excluding this COVID year, which I think we all like to do. So 90% is basically money that we receive from wholesale and retail sales, and then 10% is from philanthropic grants or donations from nice people, and then corporates, so which is extremely good for a social enterprise, but we certainly want to get there to financial sustainability at some point in the future.
Yep, that's a good aim. And as I mentioned, Paul, you're now based in New York, where you've opened an outlet of your bakery chain. What has the last 2 years during COVID been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, New York obviously was the epicenter last year, and that was very difficult, especially with the pandemics of beginning and no one really understood. So it's been good and bad, I must say. I mean, being together with my family has been good if you can do that. And I was able to do that. I sort of split the shifts and I was working overnight, so I was spending the days with my family. So that was a plus. I rode to work. I got fit, probably the only person in COVID. That was a plus. But it was certainly traumatic at times. And I mean, my focus was on my family at that point. And having children sort of locked up in their rooms for near on a year was very challenging. Homeschooling,
awful.
Very challenging. So, I mean, I can feel that from my friends now in Australia. So, but I think they're definitely going to get through this. It's looking like that way.
Yeah. And what are things like in New York for you at the moment? Is there a sense of getting back to a semblance of normality?
Yes. I mean, there are still, I mean, I can only speak for New York. I mean, the rest of America, sometimes a lot, but New York is definitely, there are more people going out. I was out at a restaurant last night. It was packed. There are parties happening. There are still masks indoors. But yeah, it's gone from the days of last March where you couldn't see anyone on the street, and I'd ride to work and there was more trucks on the side of the road. So it's definitely, it's the world away from what it was. But still I still have friends who are getting, breakthrough cases. So it's something that we'll be living with, I think, here in this kind of city for quite a while. But yes, the mood is much more.
A bit more buoyant.
Hopeful.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, now, Paul, on Eat Out In, when we have a chef or a restaurateur with us, we ask them to share a recipe of theirs that we can put on our Nightlife website, something that our listeners can replicate generally quite easily at home while they are missing out going out to restaurants at the moment. So what recipe are you going to share with us?
Well, when COVID hit, we started to make more retail goods, same things that we could make and then ship out to people's homes.
Yeah.
One of those was a za'atar little packet. So that's the one I'd like to share. And then at home recently, I've been using that za'atar to coat the top of a fleshy part of the salmon, and then I'd pan sear it, and then I'd make a salad of cherry tomatoes, radish, cucumber, crispy sourdough croutons, mint and parsley, and then mix it through with some lemon and some whole yogurt, and then baste that on the bottom. So
lovely.
Fresh, and using the bread and using the za'atar, and my children love that one. So
now, for those of our listeners who don't know what's in za'atar, what are the main spices in there?
The predominant spice probably the sumac, and then we have the thyme. We put a little cumin in ours, and we can probably fight over that. But and then there's the little bit of fenugreek we also do.
Oh, fenugreek,
that's
lovely.
Also, probably a little bit not traditional.
No.
But yeah, it's salt, a little bit of celery salt too. So. Probably technically I shouldn't be calling it za'atar, but I do.
Yeah, that's fine. Sounds delicious. So za'atar on your fish and then that delicious salad. So that recipe will be up on our Nightlife website if people want to replicate it. We've got lots of recipes up there from everyone from Rene's Red Zeppi and his roast chicken to Maggie Beer and her orange pudding, bread and butter pudding as well, which is a delicious recipe. Jamie Oliver. So lots of wonderful recipes if you want to take a look at those on our Nightlife website. So, Paul, when you look back on all this amazing stuff you've done, you know, coming from being a baker to running this extraordinary chain of bakeries now in based in New York, and then being able to put back into a social enterprise like Bread and Butter Project, how does that feel when you look back? And I know it's been a difficult couple of years, so it's probably, you know, been very difficult, but it must fill you with an amazing sense of achievement.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the trainee stories are the ones that make me, you know, a little bit wobbly at the knees. So when I hear those stories around, you know, what Ma's doing now, what her family's doing, those are the connections that I made with the early trainees and people who have passed through the project. It certainly make, you know, the sense of achievement there is huge. But I don't really look back too much on Burke Street, but the bread and butter is something special. I'm very glad that it's still alive through COVID. So there is a sense of achievement there, and the nuns, someone gives you an opportunity like that, and I think it's important to take those opportunities, and sometimes they lead into something wonderful, and I think this one has.
Paul, thank you so much for talking to me on Nightlife, and all the best as things slowly open up there in New York.
And all the best to you, and hopefully Australia is opening up soon too.
Yep, let's hope so. Paul Allen, who is a pastry chef and baker, co-founder of Burke Street Bakery and the founder of the Bread and Butter Project, which trains asylum seekers and a lot of other important good folk in the skills of baking.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.